Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. I'm so pleased that you thought that the lyrics to Wherever I Lay My Hat, That's My Home, were I'm the kind of guy who's always on the road.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I really
thought. And I was staggered when you sent me that live version last week.
Because that's what we do in our spare time.
That's what we do in our spare time. And you sent it to me because you wanted me to admire Pino Palladino's trousers, and, which were remarkable. But the tailoring of the whole band was pretty rich, I thought. I mean, Paul Young's shirts and sort of frilly pirate shirts.
Yeah, well, he just looks like a good-looking slim meatloaf. Pino Palladino yes. looks like, you know, when someone had stood at the side of the motorway, they've had a crash and someone's wrapped them up in a special emergency blanket. It's one of them.
Yeah, very, very cold bass player's legs.
But he's very thin, so the clothes sort of hang off him, and you've got no idea what the frame really looks like. A bit like, I guess, NBA award suits. You've got no idea what looks beneath. It could just be a washing pole.
But at least those NBA players, you know, they're big guys and they're strong and they're ripped. So it sort of works with the exceedingly loose folds of clothing. But if you're a rake of a bass player like Pino Palladino in the 80s,
yeah.
Everything just hangs off you. It's not a good look.
There's no form. There's no form at all. No.
It's just someone throwing a dust sheet over a skeleton.
Throwing a dust sheet over a load of old, ornate chairs in a house, in a stately house.
You know when they throw a dust sheet over a sideboard without moving the ornaments off it first and the candlesticks and things in a stately home? It's like that. It's just bits poking out and you go, what is that? Is that
a shoulder
bone? What's going on there? He's holding his guitar. It can't be that.
No. It's like the back of a third world cow.
Yes.
With the sort
or
of-
the Porsche used to refer to the cabriolet hood on earlier 911 convertibles as the hungry horse.
Yes.
Because you could see the ribs that make up the structure of the hood, and it sort of didn't
it was awful.
Form a line with the rear deck.
No.
Now it does.
Hungry horse, that's so true. I didn't know that they called it that.
Mm. And it's very evocative because you know exactly what they mean straight away.
Better than my third world cow. I would have gone with hungry horse, I think.
Everybody's got a hungry horse. Well, no, so I'm the kind of guy who's always on the roam. I suddenly realised that's what the words are. And I was like, roam? Because for years I thought it was I'm the kind of guy who's always on the run. And I was like, oh, it's not run, is it? He's saying something else.
Yeah.
Oh, it's road. And then I always thought, I'm the kind of guy who's always on the road. And I thought, is he talking about being a musician? Because it also makes him sound like a sales rep.
It does.
I'm the kind of guy who's always in a little chef.
On the road. Yeah, it does work with road.
Well, it does.
Maybe he's one of those. It's like my mate Ed, who does an awful lot of premium airport taxi runs.
Oh, so Paul Young's got a Zafira, and he's always off to the internationals.
He doesn't do short journeys. He only does the pre-book long stuff.
Mm.
But it's back to back because in order to make the business case work,
cars never switched off.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Paul Young. I mean, actually, buying a Zafira off Paul Young would probably be all right because he's always kept it running.
Oh, yeah.
And it's doing a lot of motorway miles because if he's taking people a bit of distance to the airport.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Cars, you know, that car's like a police car. At least it's been kept running and, you know, stretching its legs.
They don't even shut it off to change the oil. They pour new in at the top while they drop the old oil out at the bottom.
It's a real skill. Yeah, like once you've nailed it.
It's like a blood transfusion. I wonder if anyone's ever done that, like an automotive blood transfusion. Interesting.
My mate Big John had an Austin Cambridge that he couldn't switch off once he'd got it going. For some reason or other, it was an incredible faff to get it going. And so I don't know if you've met John.
Big John.
He's Extraordinary Adventures in Cars, where John's concerned. But this one I always remember just because he was having to drive from where he lives in Birmingham back to Ipswich, where he's from, in his malfunctioning Austin Cambridge. And he just got it going. And he's like, right, it's going. I cannot switch it off. And he used to have to go and fill up with petrol and just leave it running.
Oh, with it running. Of, you know, yeah, I've had a car like that.
Foreign country style.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And he's about to set off for Ipswich, and one of his old mates from school, who lived in, like, I don't know, Cambridge or somewhere, rang him up. She went, oh, I'm just split up with my boyfriend. Oh, is it? He was like, oh no, well, look, I'm going to be passing, kind of passing your way. Oh, come and meet me in the pub. We'll just go and have a drink.
In
and
the pub?
Someone to talk to. Yeah, she wanted to meet in the pub. So then he's like, oh, no. So he took the spare key for his Cambridge with him, got to the pub, locked it with the spare key and just left it running in the pub car park while he commiserated his friend, because it was that or it wouldn't get going again. But I said to him, I was like, John, were people not alarmed at this just stationary car just idling in the car park? And he went, no, the B-Series has got a very quiet idle.
It has. My brother's first car was not an Austin Cambridge, a Morris Oxford.
Mm.
And it is true, he could get the idle down to about, you know, 400 or 500 RPM. But that, even so, I can't believe that you couldn't solve the problem rather than spending three times more on fuel, just leaving idling everywhere. I mean, in today's society, he'd be sent to prison for that. Unnecessary idling.
That same Cambridge, I don't know, John's owned loads of Cambridges, but I think it was the same car, his main one, the one he's still got, that at one point the driver's window dropped into the driver's door and he had to secure it up with a screwdriver just jammed in the outside window.
Oh, so dodgy.
I know, but then he left it parked like that.
Oh, my God, and nobody took it.
No. That was another mate of ours, because he went, I've had to leave my car parked with this screwdriver sticking out of the thing, and I'm a bit worried. And one of our mates went, what, that someone's going to nick the screwdriver?
Yeah. They were really, from memory, you're getting me to reminisce about Morris Oxfords and stuff now.
Sorry.
The winder handle was really well geared, like two cranks, and the window was from the top to the bottom. It was nicely geared. But
a lot of old cars are like that, though, weren't they? And it's quite a satisfying. They're absolute opposite of those extremely slow and low-geared blinds that I always get annoyed by in holiday cottages that take forever to wind up.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? You end up you feel like you're doing, like, you know, in, and you go to the gym and they get you to probably like pull long pieces of rope and stuff like that for upper body strength. It's like that, but you're just trying to like get up and get out of a flat.
Just trying to let some daylight into the room.
Open a window.
Get dressed, yeah. Or I was out with a mate last night who was telling me about tile paint, because we're interesting guys. And he said it's brilliant, because I went, tile paint's crap, isn't it? He went, no, not anymore. It's good. He's just done his bathroom. He showed me a picture, it looked good, but he went, no, there's a thing you add to it. It's not just paint, you add this other stuff to it, I think might be that what helps it to work.
It's nail varnish.
Work. Ah,
it's basically nail varnish. I think so, but I might be wrong.
But he said the instructions, he looked at the instructions, it said add this stuff and then stir for 5 minutes.
Oh, so it needs a reaction.
But he was like, better do this properly, don't want to muck it up. So he set a timer on his phone. He said, have you tried stirring something for 5 minutes? It's really hard work.
Slash boring. Yeah, it's true.
Slash boring. But he didn't want to stop because he didn't want to screw up his tile paint. He wanted to do the job right. And so he did. He stirred it for 5 minutes, which I admired his precision. I think I'd have probably just sort of guesstimated.
Oh, a lot of people would have just done that. Like, a bit like my son, when I say you need to like brush your teeth for 2 minutes. And I will stand behind the door outside just to check. And his 2 minutes is 40 seconds. And I go, you really got to start wearing a watch. Come on, Wes. This is ridiculous. His sense of time is completely out of kilter. Oh, yeah. I know something that last podcast I forgot to mention.
Mm.
I got to drive the Mercedes, finally, the Mercedes EQS.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I borrowed one for 4 days, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was very excited about it. And there's a lot going on in that car, an awful lot going on. Busy, technological beast it is.
Did it have the full-width screen stuff going
on? Yeah, the sort of home cinema madness in the dash. But do you know what? There was a lot to enjoy. Range is incredible, EV range.
Is it? What are we talking about?
Oh, like 400... and something miles, 430 miles, I think I got, or a lot, a lot. But probably the worst brakes in any new car in recent memory, I would say.
Really?
To the point where I was going to phone Mercedes up and just double check that that car wasn't faulty. And I've compared my notes with a couple of other journalists, and it's true. They are really... I mean, I nearly had a full crash in it.
Because, well, as in they don't work?
They are so vague, and you're putting your foot... You know when you drive a car with no servo? So you're being a bit more physical on the pedal. I was doing that, and I was at the end of the pedal, and there was still no sign of proper bite.
No. Holy shit, that's no good.
No, it was really not good, because I nearly understeered my way into a traffic island thing. Yeah, it was...
Well, so is that because they're trying to blend, as EVs do, regen rather than actual pads gripping discs for a lot of the braking, and then the old-fashioned braking system will come in
As
and when required? But they try and blend the two, and some people seem to be better at it than others.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's the blend that's the problem or it's fundamentally underbraked, but the transition between coming off the throttle and there's a bit of regen bite here and there, and then you can use the friction brakes, it just didn't seem to work. And I was thinking, this is the flagship car.
Yeah.
That's not cool. So I jumped straight out of that and got into a Ford Puma hybrid, because I haven't driven a Puma yet. I'm the last one in the world who hasn't.
No, I haven't driven a Puma.
And I drove the hybrid version. It's got the snappiest brakes in the world. So I went from a car where it felt like some pre-war cable-braked old beauty. Got into the Puma and then nearly left stage right through the windscreen as soon as I even breathed on the brake pedal. It's like bloody hell. And I have to say, I know everyone raves about the Puma. I was a bit meh about the whole episode.
Rave about the Puma?
Oh, I don't know. People go on and on about the chassis, but you know what? I'd just driven that courtesy car that I mentioned in the previous podcast, the Suzuki SX4S.
Oh yeah, S-Cross. Were you still smitten with that by the time you gave it back?
Oh, the lyrical was waxing still.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Were you a lyrical gangster?
Yeah, I am, especially when I'm driving the S-Cross all grip hybrid. Yeah.
Ooh, I think I spot a segue. Because talking of rappers, have you seen this Will.i.am AMG collab that they announced last week?
Oh gosh, hang on, let me have a look.
It's
Will.i.am AMG.
Will.i.am has done a one-off car with AMG. It's called, now this works written down, but it does not work spoken out loud. It's called the Will I AMG. So it's Will.
Oh, Will I Am dot G.
AMG. Yeah, which works written down because it's Will I Am with a G on the end, which makes it AMG. Very clever. Can't say it out aloud because you'd say Will I Amg, and it doesn't seem to work at all. He's basically, they've given him, AMG have given him an AMG GT four-door, that car that nobody buys ever. I guess they've got spares. And he's taken it to West Coast Customs.
Oh, gosh, why did he do that?
I don't know. So he's given it the face of a G-Wagon and made it a two-door with rear hinge doors.
Why would you make it a two-door? The whole point of that is it's the four-door. There's already a two-door one.
Yeah, Will wasn't paying attention in that meeting, but and then the back is basically sort of just seems to be like the normal.
I'm looking at it now.
It's shatting horrible because the front is all boxy like a G-Wagon, but then it has this long bonnet and the back is more curvaceous, and it just sort of is all a bit of a mishmash. And you suddenly realise why car designers earn their money, because this is clearly amateur hour.
Hang on, the grill. The badge on the front grill is the three-pointed star, but like the mouth of a bear, like a cartoon bear's face.
Yes, because I'm reading this. It symbolises the phrase "bear witness," which is the name of a line of limited edition clothes and accessories.
Oh gosh,
Mercedes say could be available online, and at its AMG Mercedes Experience Centre in Miami. Sort of makes sense.
Good job,
now,
I'm
doesn't it?
Already sitting down for this. Okay. Do you remember the Maybach Accelero, which is not an ice cream?
No.
You know, which was
I remember it.
It was a concept, wasn't it? but a fully functional concept that did big skids and all sorts. And it was like a sort of Cruella de Vil spec, long-bonneted two-door sinister thing. It looks like... It does look like a sort of bad rendition of that from certain angles, because the bonnet's really long and it's almost got that SLR side vent in the back of the wing.
Yes, it has got... I was wondering what that reminded me of. It's after
it's
SLR,
a slar. It's
it?
A slar. Slar.
Slar.
Slar. The issue I have here, I mean, the G-Wagon front end on a low slung car is interesting, but it doesn't work. And
it doesn't work.
I think there's history of Will.i.am trying to modify cars that I suggest AMG should have taken into account before giving him a free four-door GT to carve up. Because he's done some appalling things with West Coast Customs. And what annoys me is I think West Coast Customs are capable of really good stuff. But didn't he take... I'm trying to remember. He took a VW Beetle and turned it into a DeLorean, or one of the or the other way round. And you're like, why did you do that? Because you could have just started with the other car. It's an idiotic waste of time.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit. It's like spaghetti bolognese flavored ice cream. You just go, there's no need for this.
No, I'm sure he did.
If you want some spag bol, have some spag bol, or have some ice cream. Don't be silly. I remember that Maybach Accelero, not the ice cream, looking really nice, and I've just looked it up, and actually it's not nice at all.
Isn't it not nice at all?
No, it's not. It's nowhere near as nice as I remember. It's got an absolutely appalling... I mean, it really is amateurish. It's got this appalling front end that looks like something that Mitsuoka would reject. And then the side is not as sort of elegantly dramatic as I remember. It's all a bit heavy-handed and shite, and there's a picture of it on some very bad wheels here.
Oh, well.
That I...
I don't want to look at it because I actually remember it quite fondly.
Don't look at it. I know. I really remember this being quite good, and it's just simply not.
Oh, gosh. Oh, do you know what? It looks like Will.i.am's old West Coast Customs DeLorean. I'm just looking at pictures of it. It looks like a Lancia Monte Carlo that's been stung a lot by wasps. That's what it looks like.
It went into its loft.
Yes, it
saw
did.
A wasp and it thought, "Oh, strange. What's a wasp doing in here?" Ah! And there's a nest, and they all came out at once.
There was a wasp's nest in my loft, but over winter they either all went away or they all died, because I went up there after half a bottle of wine and started jabbing it. But it was all right.
See, I saw there was a developing wasp's nest in our shed, and it was just a tiny sort of orb on the roof.
Yes,
and
very
I went
neat.
Completely over the top with wasp powder and all sorts of shit. And I swear there was like one wasp in there just going...
Was it just housekeeping for all the other wasps? Like, they've all gone on holiday and you've chosen to rain down on me.
Well, honestly, there was this thing was only like the size of a squash ball. It wasn't a bit. It was just a little orb. You couldn't have got more than about four wasps inside it comfortably. And I don't know what wasps are like with personal space, but I imagine they're not that fussy. But even so, I think I went a bit over the top. I could have just probably sort of flicked it off and trodden on it, and it would have been fine. Anyway, where were we?
On that
I don't
side
know.
Of things,
Will.i.am being the world's worst car designer.
Yeah, I think
that
Will's
DeLorean
an interesting
is absolutely
guy.
Terrible, isn't it?
Will's out there, and I think he is an interesting, pleasant, quite inspiring guy. I'm not just taking him down for the sake of it.
But
I think collaborations with large companies like AMG, I think, is perhaps not a great idea.
No, a friend of mine worked with him a while ago.
Oh, really?
And she was really fond of him. She said he was very nice, quite eccentric, but he's a nice guy. And she liked him a lot. So, yeah, we're not dissing Will.i.am per se, but just, you know, maybe his efforts in car design are a bit...
I still always, when I see the way he sort of separates his name out and punctuates his name, I do think if I was Brian May, say, and I wanted to reinvent myself, it'd be Burr E. Ann. Or something like that, and just go,
Well, if you're Brian Ferry, you could be Burwayan, Burwayan, which sounds like something a Geordie's trying to tell you. I don't know what, though. It's true. There's only some names that works for. I don't know that.
I know. I couldn't do it.
Actually, no, you could, because you could use your full name.
Jonathan.
Jonathan. I don't know.
Oh,
what,
yeah, so
to
just
what
be the A
that.
In the middle. Jonathan. It just sounds rubbish, though, Richard. Come on, I wouldn't do that,
it's
would
not,
I? Idiot. I wouldn't do that.
No. What about your smut-ith?
No, I mean, that's just ridiculous. People would just like...
We're just workshopping here. It's fine, doesn't it? Yes, you don't have to commit to your your rapping name yet. We're just doing a bit of brainstorming. It's fine.
Sorry, I've got slightly claggy.
Are you claggy?
Yeah, I'm a little claggy. I'm just a sip of water. Hang on.
I'm a bit claggy. Okay. I went out drinking last night and it was not... It was.
Oh, did you?
This morning was not pretty.
I landed at the airport at 1 a.m. and my sat-nav took me the most convoluted route away from the airport. Because it's one of those smart sat-navs that obviously uses live updates on Google Maps, I thought, oh, it knows something that I don't. And I was very tired and perhaps vulnerable, so I just believed it. I ended up going to places I've never been, over humpback bridges, under little, really narrow underpasses, under railway bridges, went to the end of a cul-de-sac.
What?
And then I had to reverse in the dark, and this is when I realised that my new long-term test car, which I won't reveal yet, basically has no reversing lights, or if it does, they don't work. And I accidentally, very slowly reversed it into somebody's fence when I was trying to go back up a cul-de-sac. Really slowly, I must say. Really slowly.
You slowly reversed into someone's fence?
Yeah, because I went down a dead-end road and it was very narrow and there's no streetlights. And it was 1 a.m. and I just wanted to get home. So I just crept it back, looking at my mirrors, but there's no reversing lights. Oh, I couldn't see them. It didn't seem to work.
You should have been in the... in the new Range Rover, because it's got one of the gimmicks / gadgets it's got is that when you stick it in reverse, it has underlighters.
Does
it? It creates a pool of light around the car, so you can reverse in this pool of light for exactly that reason. I mean, it's also got cameras and parking sensors and stuff, but clearly there must be something that customers have mentioned.
You can see the neighbour's
dark spot
under there.
Yeah, maybe that's it. It's like, I'm so bored of running over my neighbour's cat. I just want to stop. So, it does a little puddle of light around itself, which... allows you to reverse visibility.
That was bad. It was.
So you're not going to tell you what your new long-term
car is? I'll tell you next time, I think.
Okay.
I think
give me one clue.
It's electric.
Okay.
Is that vague
that
enough for
down.
You?
Yeah.
It's electric, okay? She lives in a family full of eccentrics.
It's a Peugeot 205 Electrique from the 80s. It's got like 900 car batteries around the interior.
I tell you what was really cool. I fully charged it at home, went down to the airport, parked at the airport, and I got out and it had 76% charge. And I thought, that's incredible, because I can... and I did, when I landed, like I said, I got home in the really early hours of the morning, and I was cross after going down this cul-de-sac and getting a bit... tangled up. So I did drive quite fast home with no regard for economy. And it didn't matter because I had a big battery and lots of spare surplus miles, and I felt good about that.
Did the fence fall over?
No. It just sort of leant on it. You know, where it sort of... It was just a kiss. Yeah. It was just a kiss, Richard. Come on. Come on. Okay. Just a tell-like kiss.
A bit of creaking.
Yeah, there was a creak. It was just a little creak, and I thought, oh, bobbins.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. But I felt vulnerable as soon as I went to the end of the cul-de-sac. I thought, oh no! And I swear the cul-de-sac had tapered. I swear it was much narrower one end than the other. But anyway,
probably
sort of thing an old person would say in an insurance claim.
Yeah. It just leapt out on me. What the fence?
Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about last cast that I didn't. I decided to have a couple of hours to myself and watched Gone in 60 Seconds with Nicolas Cage the other week. And because I watched that film on the cinema when it first came out and thought it was quite an exciting film. I think it came out in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to like about it. I mean, it's silly, but there's a part in it which I had to almost turn away from because it made my skin crawl. And it's the bit where he assembles the team to do the big swipe, you know, to do all the boosting or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
On that one night, you've got to take all the cars in one night, blah, blah, blah. And he He gets everyone in a circle, tells everyone to shut up, and then plays a little and then
everyone gather around. Everyone, okay, yeah, Dave, come over here. Everyone, shut up.
Yeah. And then puts on Low Rider.
Shut up.
Puts on Low Rider by War, and then puts on the worst leather jacket I've ever seen. And then does this sort of like, imagine, I'm just trying to do it in front of the microphone here, sort of jerks his hands out like he's playing an organ energetically, yeah. and then just pauses in that Nicolas Cage way with mad eyebrows, and then goes,
yeah,
okay, let's go, and then that's it. And it's such an odd, awkward part of the film, because the jacket hasn't got any creases in it at all, to the point where it looks like it might be made of rigid plastic.
Well, like a Lego jacket. Yeah.
It's horrible. It's just horrible.
Those little tabards that you can put on Lego figures that it made big.
It's exactly that. And he does it in front of Angelina Jolie. And I'm thinking, at the time, one of the most attractive women in the world, I would have thought. And you're going to do something quite embarrassing, but you've got to do it within 10 feet of Angelina Jolie. I would not be comfortable with that, acting or not.
Yeah, I'm just acting this horrible jacket. It's not mine. I was going to search, because I don't know what you're talking about. I have so little memory of that film.
Do you? You must watch it. Must watch it.
When you type into Google Nicolas Cage Gone in 60 Seconds, one of the prompts that comes up is leather jacket.
You're joking.
And when you click on it, oh, yes.
It's not very good.
Okay. Okay,
It's because it doesn't look realistically leather, is what I'm... it's like someone pressed it.
It's a pleather jacket.
It's a pleather.
Is it sort of a kind of formal sort of cut? It looks like he did promo posters for the movie wearing that jacket, leaning on the Mustang.
I'm sure he did. And the other problem I have with the film, and look, I'm not going to tear apart a film that was fundamentally just pure entertainment and silliness, but am I allowed to say I really don't like the whole Eleanor thing. It just pisses me off.
It's an awful looking car.
Yeah, it's nobody called it out and just gone, listen, you've taken a chrome bumpered Mustang and you've put just a silly plastic chin guard from an American footballer on it, and it looks awful.
Yeah.
It just looks awful.
It doesn't match, does it?
It doesn't match.
It's like two different eras well together. Funny enough, this photo of Nicolas Cage wearing the bad jacket leaning on the horrible Eleanor Mustang, the car's got... He's leaning on the front wing, and the car's got a little bit of lock on. And you can see it's got some very modern sort of tyres on it. Oh. And again, that just sort of looks wrong, because they're a modern, you know...
Like, modern 55 profile or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and somehow it just looks weird, because the lighting, the shot's been lit in such a way that the rear of the car has got a spotlight on it, and you can see it's an old Mustang.
Can we redo that shot then? Can you take a photo of yourself with a leather jacket on, or sitting on a car with the wheels slightly turned? Oh no, we could.
I don't own a leather jacket. Do you own a leather jacket?
No, I used to. I think I've got rid of it. Damn.
Every so often I go, oh, I should get myself a leather jacket, and then I go, middle-aged man.
Is it a bit?
I think it is a bit. Or like when a mate of mine went to an event and Nick Knowles turned up in motorcycle leathers.
But no motorbike.
My mate knows Nick Knowles a little bit. And he went over to him and went, all right, Nick, can you come on your bike? And he went, no.
Oh, you're joking.
Why are you wearing a motorcycle jacket?
Oh, no.
But
don't
because,
tell me he had a helmet under one arm as well.
Well, I forgot to ask. I would like it if he did. He's just going for a look. You know the way that the famous car journalist Leonard Setright, LJK Setright, in his later years, and he was writing for Car Magazine, he was quite often pictured in features that he'd written, sort of standing by a car looking thoughtful. But he was always dressed, you know, sort of like a rabbi, basically. He got the long beard, yarmulke, I don't know what it's called, forgive me, Jewish listeners, but the vest thing with the strings that comes off it. And
the vest thing with strings.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
vest thing with the strings on it. And he was often sort of holding a copy of the Torah and things. And he just went, okay, that's, you know, it's quite devout. But apparently he just used to go through phases of trying on, like sort of running with different looks. And in later life, as he sort of rediscovered his faith, he decided to go all in and basically dress as a rabbi. But before that, in the 70s, he used to just wear tennis whites and carry a tennis racket, but there was no evidence that he actually ever went and played tennis. So I think Nick Knowles might do that, the biker look, without actually having a motorcycle. I don't know.
Full tennis gear and a racket,
apparently,
and never playing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
Well, this was the story.
Seldom playing.
Seldom play. I mean, even seldom playing is still like, just only wear the whites when you're going to play. Don't wear them when you're going on the launch.
It's like me wearing gym gear when I'm just not going to go to the gym very often.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think a lot of people do that, though, don't they, now?
Yeah, there is.
I always like
it
when you see someone in sort of a lot of, like, in kind of full gym kit, but they're sitting having a burger or smoking a cigarette or something. You just go, are you going to or from the gym or neither?
It's not a good look. I had to share a plane last night with lots of people like that. Yeah.
Well, are you coming back from Spain, weren't you?
Yeah, Ryanair. Oh, gosh.
Oh, Ryanair.
Yeah, Ryanair. Absolute Ryanair. Yeah. Lots of blokes talking non-stop about football, wearing tops that are a bit too small for them. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, okay. You've reminded me of something good, that Nick Cage has got a new film out, which apparently is quite good, I think.
Is it?
It's sort of about him. Yeah, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And it's about him. So, you know, he's playing himself.
I didn't.
And it sounds quite funny.
Okay.
He's playing a sort of, you know, a fictionalised version of himself, like... like people do, like Matt LeBlanc did in episodes.
Yes, I quite like. I did enjoy my Gone in 60 Seconds revisited, but Low Rider by War is one of my favourite songs, and it did tarnish it slightly for me with this with the sort of awkward silence next to Angelina Jolie. But I'll let it slip this once. But yeah, if you get a chance, listeners, if you have never watched it, or you just go, oh, I can't remember what it was like, it was 20 odd years ago. But it does predate, I might have said this before, it does predate Fast and Furious. So a lot of people go on and on about Fast and Furious being a very influential film when it came out. And of course it was and is. But Gone in 60 Seconds, there's a lot of similarities with the whole, like, you know, at night going and pinching cars and how all that stuff unravels. Mm. And the way it's shot, I think, is quite similar to F and F. So
F and F.
F and F. I don't know if anybody calls it that.
I've never heard it called that before, but I feel that maybe we should lobby for this to become
Can
a
we?
Thing.
Can
Although
we?
F and F is F and F also not a supermarket owned brand clothes?
Oh, is it
like
Tesco's
Tesco
own?
Asda's or someone? Yeah.
Well, maybe
so.
That's maybe there you go. Maybe Vin Diesel just wears F and F vests. they're good value.
Also,
they fit
now. We sort of said last week, not sort of, we did say last week that we were going to try and not swear in the next episode of the podcast. I haven't really been keeping a track of whether we have or haven't.
I don't think I have.
I don't think I have either. But anyway, well, we'll see how we get on. We had a lot of messages about this from people who'd sort of slightly misinterpreted maybe what we were saying, because I said we should just try and do one so that your mum doesn't keep asking your dad what twat means.
You've gone and said it now.
Damn it. Oh. But we had loads of people in the YouTube comments and sending us emails and stuff and on the Patreon going, don't censor your podcast. If people don't want to hear swearing, don't listen and don't play it in front of your children and stuff like that. And so I did feel we should say we're not intending to censor it.
Oh,
we just thought we'd try.
No.
We try and have a week off swearing, but already I've gone and said the T word.
Well,
so
we could just carry on with some euphemisms, can't we?
Yeah. Well, because F and F sounds to me like it's a euphemism for something.
It does.
You know, like T and A.
Yes.
Which, funny enough, was the name of a kebab shop near where I lived as a student.
T and A, what, territorial T and army?
Yeah. We're both territorial and army. I was going to say what I thought it stood for, but that would have been swearing.
I think, I don't mind referring to people instead of just calling them an effing T or something like that. You could just call them a complete bell ringer or similar.
You can still say flute as well.
Yeah, you can still say complete yeah, fleshy flirtist, if that's what you want.
This is getting a bit ruder, but yeah. I might stop saying F and F, though.
Just F and F's good.
F and F. People go, what's that? Don't you know?
I feel like we should be sponsored Absolute by F and F, because that'd be S and S and F and F. That's very convoluted, but I like it.
Yeah.
It's only rock and roll, but I like it.
Now, guys, listen.
Guys.
I'm going to bring Movie Corner to a close.
Yeah.
Because I want to lead you over to Book Corner.
Oh.
Because a few episodes ago, I mentioned David Tuhig, the man who led the development of the Alpine A110, amongst other things. And I think I said he'd got a book out. And I might have even mentioned that he sent me a copy. I've got a copy for you as well, by the way, which I'll send to you. He very kindly shared the book, because in the early days of him planning to write it, he got in touch with me through a mutual friend for a little bit of advice on getting a book published. And I don't think I said anything helpful, but he managed to get a book deal with Veloce Publishing. So as a thank you, he sent me a copy of the book, and I've just finished reading it. And it's about three big projects that he had a major role in: the Nissan Qashqai, the Renault Zoe, and the Alpine A110. And it's really interesting. If you want to know how the modern car industry works, it's just an object lesson in the realities of trying to get cars made, which is, for the most part, you know, desperately trying to get things passed. You know, the sort of set budgets, and then there's a great, I won't spoil it, but there's a great anecdote about why the original Qashqai has a central fog light in the back bumper. And it's a brilliant story, because it makes you realise that even huge car making corporations are not beyond accidentally cocking things up. But for the most part, you know, the main thing they need to do is make sure they can make a car and make profit on it, and make it sort of relevant to the market. So the Qashqai adventures are quite interesting from that point of view.
Qashqai Zoe, adventures.
You don't realise how hard it is to make an electric car, because they got the prototypes running, and then they had all sorts of problems with getting them to charge because of all the safety systems. Because EVs being quite a new frontier, for Renault, they went sort of as far as they could to make it as safe as they could, and it's got all of these fail safes for sort of situations that would probably never happen, like you're charging your Zoe in a garage that floods and stuff. But to make sure that people aren't going to electrocute themselves no matter how hard they try,
yeah.
It's got all these fail safes and trips and fallbacks and all sorts. But of course, then if you get, because public charges are so variable, if you get the wrong sort of, you know, frequency of electricity coming through, it'll trip the car. And they had to work really, really hard to sort of refine all this out, including this insane odyssey of taking prototypes into Paris and trying out every single public charger in Paris to see how it played with the car. I won't spoil any more of the stories, but it's a very enjoyable read. If you're into cars, if you're fascinated to know how cars are actually made. And the one thing that I took away from it, above all else, is that, you know, when you see people sort of on social media and things going, oh, I can't believe they haven't made this. Can't believe, you know, Alfa Romeo haven't made the Giulia Quadrifoglio wagon, or I can't believe they haven't made a hot hatchback of this. I can't believe they haven't replaced this. Every single time, the reason will be because they've crunched the numbers and it simply doesn't make sense. Mm. And they've gone, we've got to spend 100 million euros to make this variant, and we reckon it'll sell 400 a year. Not happening.
No.
And that's the harsh reality of making cars. It's a bastard difficult business. Oh, I've sworn again.
Oh, sorry. Richard, that's two now.
Difficult business.
Wheeling out the Will I Ams.
Yeah. I would heartily recommend it. It's called Inside the Machine by David Tuhig, and I think it's a very, very interesting insight into the realities of the car making business. And that is my book report.
Thank you, bravo for the book corner. That's really good. Comprehensive review. Well done. I like that. I'm gonna grab myself a.
Well, I'll get you the copy, your copy, to you, and you can have a read as well.
I forgot to say all that. I actually went to a VW show on my own. I had a day off and went to a car show, sort of just paid to go in like a normal person,
a
normal person, didn't take children, didn't have my phone on. Yeah, it was lovely. And the reason why I'm saying this is because it's a very trad VW show, and I actually went there in a T7 multivan, which I had on test.
The multivan?
I like the multivan. The multivan's good. There's lots to like.
I like the multivan, but I don't know why I like the multivan.
It's because it's the suggestion of adventure and versatility that turns you on, I suggest. It's the things you could do. Even if you end up not doing them, you could do them. And I've got to say, it drives a lot better than a T6 Transporter because it's not a van, it's a car. So it looks like a van, and it's called a van, weirdly, but it's definitely not a van. They shouldn't have called it the multivan because I think it almost undersells it. But anyway, I'm going to be doing a review of that on the Late Break Show. In fact, it's probably out by the time this podcast comes out. I can't even remember my own pissing schedule. Oh, I've sworn. Anyway.
I might be on VW's, I'm not going to say a swear word, I'm going to say naughty list, because I gave the ID4 GTX a bit of a stinky review in the Sunday Times.
But
if you don't want a stinky review, don't give it those absolutely cock-awful switches that don't work properly, would be my advice to VW. But on the other hand, I have just bought one of their products.
So you have,
nicely if I can borrow a multivan, because I quite fancy it.
Yeah, I like the multivan. It's good. It was the Fev as well.
Which, good Fev?
Yeah, I think it was an all right Fev.
How many miles are you getting on the electro?
Ambient temperature while I was testing it was about 10 to 12 degrees, and I was getting around 23 to 25 miles EV only. Mm-hmm. So to give you an example, I went on a 60-mile journey, and I ended up getting 79 to the gallon. So that just gives you a little indication, because it's very hard to suggest the real-world MPG and efficiency of cars like this when you're trying to test them.
I know.
But basically, yeah, you can drive EV only for about 25
You kind of have to let them mark their own homework and then just, you know...
You do. You really do.
Report that report what you find there. But it's hard, isn't it? Without...
Yeah. I stuck it in kind of VW intelligent hybrid mode that works it out for itself, and I drove it from my house to York and back, and it got 49.5 to the gallon. So,
how many times have you driven to York recently?
I've driven to York a reasonable amount, actually. I'm not even a highwayman either.
Is this the York Viking Centre?
Yeah, I know.
You keep going up and then finding it shut.
Yeah. I just don't look at the opening times like a complete idiot. Just constantly.
Where's your wife going, Johnny, you should check the website. But I don't need to check the website. That's not authentically Viking. No. I'm just going to get into this hybrid Volkswagen and drive to York again.
And check my sundial. It's time to leave.
The time is now,
and you can set your departure time and preheat it and all that vajazzle, which is good. So yeah, that's cool. But there was something else I was going to say. What was it?
I don't know.
There was something.
Do you
else?
Want me to fill time by reading a listener's email that I that tickled me?
Go on,
tickled me like it's Ian Payne. Now, Ian, I think I recognise Ian's name as a long term listener and a Twitterist. He says, "Hi, Johnny and Richard. I wasn't going to comment, but as you have mentioned Marillion three times now in the podcast, I'll ask Lucy, their manager, to find out what cars they owned in the 80s.
Oh, gosh.
I'll pass your details on to her." Well, thanks, Ian. I haven't actually written back to Ian to say, yes, that's a good idea, but I presume he's done it already. I don't know. He says that he knows Steve Hogarth, who replaced Fish in 1989, has a Mini Cooper. Drummer Ian Mosley has a Range Rover Velar, I think. And Pete Trivavas, Trivavas, is it? He's the bass player. He has an old BMW Z3. Not sure what Mark Kelly and Steve Rotheray drive.
Oh.
But Ian adds, "I have a feeling that Fish was not a driver in the 80s. I'm not sure how much of the 80s he spent in a Fit State 2 drive." Now, I said I'd got a bit of a contact because someone I know knows Fish. This
can't
contact of mine
featuring. We're talking about Marillion again.
Why are we doing Marillion again?
I don't even know more than one song of theirs. People are going to think that I'm into them, and I promise I'm not.
Ian also... Now, clearly Ian is a Marillion fan because he said, as for the genre, they're generally regarded as prog rock, also neo-prog or art rock. They're not the band you think they are. Well... I almost feel like I need to go and listen to some Marillion now. But the bit that tickled me about Ian's email, that was the bit I meant to read out before I got bogged down in Marillion again, is he says, on a completely different side of things, body parts getting stuck in motorised closures.
When
were we talking about
that? Oh, it's me shutting my hair in the Ford GT.
Oh, yes, of course.
Near Martin Brundle.
And my wife getting shut in the sunroof. Yeah,
that's right.
I've forgotten about that. He says, it reminded me of a story involving my late father, who was a press car delivery driver for Subaru, Hyundai, Isuzu back in the 80s and 90s.
Oh.
On delivering a car to a journalist's home, which had a tight gateway, he embarked on a bit of dad reversing by sticking his head out of the window to ensure he didn't damage anything. Unfortunately, his forearm must have caught the electric window switch and his head was caught in the window, not trapping him, but resulting in a nosebleed which poured down his white shirt. He had to endure the journey home on the train with a blood-stained shirt. My God.
What?
From an accidental electric window disaster. I presume that must date it back to pre, sort of, you know, safety rollbacks. But I imagine if you're mashing the switch, I don't know how much the rollback kicks in. It's when one-touch windows came in, they put the rollback
The rollback kicks in. It sounds like some sort of foreskin analogy.
Oh, well, that's
is
your,
that like a VTEC foreskin? Yeah, oh, the rollback. Oh, yeah. And when the rollback kicks in, oh, yeah. Rollbacks oh, hang on.
In, yo.
Hang on.
Well, that's the first track off your new album, recording as Smut-ith. Rollback kicks
Burr
in.
Bur-E-N. I've got a guitar solo with Bur-E-N. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for the message, Ian, and thank you. If I haven't already, I'll be in touch about for some reason pursuing this fruitless Marillion car search that we're embarked on.
How did it even begin? I can't remember now. It's because I watched a late night YouTube video of them on Top of the Pops, and it was embarrassing. That's how it all started.
As so many things do, is it you just watching music videos while you brush your teeth?
It is. It's teeth brushing old 80s bad music videos and live performances. That's what it usually is. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do this week.
What else did you send me? Oh, yeah, you sent me a picture of that Portaloo mount sort of parked on wheels on a perilously angled hillside.
Well, yeah, that's where I flew back from. I was doing a corporate job and in Spain. Haven't done one for a long time, but we had to get up to the top of a mountain in for dawn to start shooting, and there was a Portaloo up there for the crew to use.
What?
Well, they hired
your
it.
Your crew had organised.
Yeah,
that
it had been dropped off, and it was the most amazing piss vista / poo vista. If you were to poo or wee with the door open, looking out over the top of this rock, it was incredible. With the sun filtering through the trees, and it made me giggle, so I thought I'd send you a picture.
Yeah, it did make me giggle, but all I could imagine was Last of the Summer Wine with Foggy going for a poo and then rolling off down the hillside because Compo had released the handbrake or something.
Composto, yeah, exactly.
Composto.
Yeah, he's a Spanish massive enthusiast of rotting matter in order to stop man-made fertilisers. Yeah. Well, sorry, clanging.
Do you know what I saw the other day?
Yeah.
So I don't know, this is a complete non sequitur, but I saw, when was it, last Sunday, the Sunday before? I saw, obviously, there were some cars coming from a banger rally, I suppose.
Okay.
And questioning intonation, not sure what they were doing. But yeah, I saw, I saw a couple of, you know, obviously bangers on the back of trucks, one of which was an original Mondeo, and I think they're quite popular. They were quite popular with bangers, weren't they?
They were.
One of those cars that's sort of freakishly strong.
They are, yeah.
The other one surprised me. Separate lorry, different. It wasn't even with the other one in convoy or anything. Was a late model Celica.
Really? The wedgie one?
The wedgie angular
one
that was
one.
Really nice to drive. The last one that we got here, yeah.
Okay.
The sort of nice, lightweight one.
Okay.
And I was like, I mean, there's no reason why that wouldn't be a banger, but at the same time, it seems somehow unlikely because it felt like very, very light, that car. And like that might sort of be perceived as flimsiness, but maybe not.
Coupes seem to be quite good at bangers. They love a Supra.
Do they?
They love a Mark III Supra. They're supposed to be incredibly strong, but yet the back window is massive, and of course they take the windows out. Mm. So it always troubles me as to how that can possibly be a good banger car, but they are supposed to be really good.
Wow.
Really good, yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of them have been killed on the short oval and all that.
On the short oval.
It's like the Crucible, isn't it? It's always the narration of a snooker championship at the Crucible. You could do the same thing with banger racing, I think. Brutal banger racing with a gravelly voice. Very shortly, here we go. It's Taz and the boys are moving in the long wheelbase Jaguar XJ. And then over across on the left there, you've got your Buick LeSabre, which seems to have suffered some appalling damage in a previous race, but nevertheless, it's got enough energy to go on. He's obviously a bit wheezy because he's just ran up the stairs into the little commentary booth from having a cheeky little embassy at the bottom of the stairs. Anyway, so it's all going to go down here. There's a Mark 1 Granada. Looks in incredible condition, but sadly it's going to perish on the short oval in the next 12 minutes. So let's see how it all pans out, shall we, on that side of things.
The short oval,
yes,
as a sort of metonym for banger racing generally, is one of those ones. I was talking to someone about this the other week, that writing about cars is rife with those where... Have you ever seen, there's that Twitter account called Second Mentions,
mm-mm,
which pulls up writers and journalists on when they'll say something like, Bono has opened a new hotel in Dublin, the sunglasses-loving frontman, and you go,
no.
Sunglasses-loving frontman? But it's classic Second Mention. It's like, oh, you can't use Bono again. You've just said Bono. You've got to say something else. But the car world is terrible for it. We know things like the Blue Oval.
Oh, yes.
The Three-Pointed Star.
Yeah.
And then by extension, using where a company is from to as
can't
a metonym for
it. You're going to mention
Norfolk,
aren't you? You're going to mention Lotus.
Well, I was going to...
It's always that.
Spokespeople from Hethel say... But it wouldn't be that, would it be? Hethel says... And you go, Hethel? Hethel doesn't say anything. Hethel's a frigging village. What are you talking about?
Hethel's
nonsense,
an old woman
but...
that sweeps a doorstep.
Hethel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's also when they go, they've started saying Gaydon for Land Rover, and you sort of go, well, they're kind of based there, but also in Solihull, but then I suppose that's the factory. What are you at? What are you getting at?
Yeah,
where's the head office these days?
Where's this going?
I know. It's really, that's the thing. It's just like, you're stretching it to breaking point. Since we're also on this sort of lazy tropes of car journalism, I'm a bit bored now of teases. I saw end of last week, Volkswagen teases new small electric car. And I was like, well, stop teasing it. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, you've got smelly doors. Ugh, look at you. Ugh, you've got a really
smelly
ugly
doors.
Yeah, they're teasing it, aren't they? It's not nice.
Oh, it's trolling.
VW
are trolling their new model.
Trolls.
Yeah. Yet to be born model. They're already trolling it. Yeah, you're not going to be.
That was in one of the... In one of the reports about that new small Volkswagen Group electric car, which I'm quite interested in just because I think it's coming in 2025, which is when the lease will be up on my e-up, which I presume they'll stop making.
It's all about you, isn't it, Richard? It's all about you
and your leases. I've got that. I discovered quite recently this idea of the main character syndrome, where you know you sort of view yourself as the central character in this movie of the whole world that you live in. But I was sort of like, well, surely everyone does that. I mean, that's just sort of you can only see things from your own point of view, literally. So,
oh, don't start
don't
that.
Understand. Anyway, it's not the time for philosophical debate because I've got a terrible hangover. So, but yeah, I was reading where they're going to build this new small electric car in Spain, and they're building a new battery factory down there. And one of the reports, one of the car websites, referred to it as a gigafactory. And I was like, can we just knock this off right now? There is no such thing as a gigafactory. It's a factory. That's it. Tesla uses the word gigafactory because they like to make stuff up, but that is not an actual word to describe a thing. A battery factory is called a battery
factory. It's a factory of batteries, yes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll got that off my chest.
Yeah.
That's all I really need to say on that side of things.
Yeah, I'm nervous that if there've been any aeroplane sounds coming from my mic, I've just realised there might have been some jet action going overhead, but it's probably John Travolta. Ooh.
It's probably
Travolta.
He's got a terrible craving for langoustines, and he's hot-footing to the Norfolk coast.
He's going to Scotland.
At low level. Is that where langoustines come from?
He's flying around the perimeter of the UK, but with a very long telescope.
Maybe he's got Nick Cage. Can Nick Cage fly, or is that just in films? I'm not sure.
He could fly with his really long leather jacket, like one of those flying squirrels that jumps out of a tree and uses all the slack skin to just suddenly take flight.
It's just in the what do they call it, the ramp thing that goes down at the back of a Hercules, going, "Thanks, John." He gives him an exaggerated salute before he just drops backwards out of it with his leather coat.
Oh, I bet
on.
He does that.
But Nick, you haven't got a parachute. I don't need one.
It's so true. He'd be so confident, wouldn't he? He would just do that.
Yeah.
But Cage, I think we've talked about it before, but yeah, Cage has been seen around the UK, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, because he used to live where I'm going to live, in Bath or Bath.
Are you buying Nicolas Cage's old house that he got bored of?
It has got a lot of horrible leather jackets in the wardrobe when we looked around.
Has it?
Just in fact, the curtains are all made of what looks like sort of plasticky leather. It's a strong look.
Leather
wardrobe.
It's quite
a goth thing to do that. Black leather curtains would be an incredibly goth thing to have. I don't know whether
it's ever been attempted. I don't like that idea.
I don't say I like it, but I'm just thinking if you're a goth, you'd probably be quite into it. I like this time of year as the weather starts to warm up. It's been quite nice and warm the past few days, and I love seeing sort of gloomy goths in hot weather because they're kind of going, "I'm not taking the coat off, man. Just not doing it."
You're just marinating inside.
Yeah, but if you ever go down to Camden Town or somewhere, you can just still catch the odd goth wandering about, trudging, not wandering, they trudge about because they're goths.
That's true. In fact, you've just reminded me, talking of that sort of thing, of Bristol, the eternally 90s city. In Gone in 60 Seconds, Angelina Jolie's got dreads.
Oh!
She's got dreads and they're sort of bleached. I think they're bleached white or light silver or something odd.
Yes.
So, she could have been... Nick Cage probably was filming that, constantly thinking, "I'm going to move to Bath soon." And then Angelina Jolie was like, "Oh, well, I've got parentage in Bath because, you know, I'm a little bit 90s, so hence why I've got my dreads." And so maybe God in 60 Seconds was actually filmed in Bath. That would have been brilliant. Or Bristol. Would have been fantastic.
Very hilly. A lot of clutch action.
Oh, lot.
If you're in a man.
An awful lot.
And now, I was out last night with an old friend of mine who has, for the past while, been living in Bristol and has moved back to London, and I said to her, I went, "Actually, you know, mate and I have got this theory that Bristol is Britain's most 90s city." And she just went, "Oh my god, yes, that's one of the reasons I've moved away. I was so tired of it."
Really?
And she just went through this list of she just went, "Oh my god, it's just like white people's dreads and Greenpeace t-shirts," and she just went, it's really boring after a while. She got quite ranty about it.
So we hit the nail on the head.
Upset you.
We absolutely hit the nail on the head.
From an actual Bristol resident, well, former now Bristol resident, but someone who lived there.
It was 290.
Is still trying to sell their flat there. Is confirmed all of our suspicions.
Is that reason for sale in the advert? Selling flat because area 290s for me.
290s. Need to move somewhere. Need to move about 30 years forward in time. Also, Bristol, I noticed this last week in those local elections, Bristol voted to get rid of their mayor. Like, just to scrap the idea of having a mayor, is that a very 90s thing? Because cities having mayors sort of came back, didn't it? But Bristol have clearly gone,
No, I don't want that.
We didn't have that in the 90s.
They'd vote in someone from BBC Six Music to be their mayor if there was going to be a mayor.
Like Gideon, what's his face?
Gideon Coe.
No, who's Giles Peterson. He's sort of quite 90s, isn't he? Because he feels like he's always on a gap year. He's just brought you some CDs back.
Yes, he has stuff that you haven't heard before. So
because he's been to Goa.
Exactly. He is ultimate gap year guy.
Because he must be in his 50s. And he's still on a gap year.
He probably is.
There's some good going. Well done.
He's got a very loose fitting knitted jumper, which ordinarily wouldn't suit anybody, but he seems to amazingly carry it off.
Never washed it, though.
It's not washed. Never been washed. No, it's not washed.
I think he's also got some kind of like a poncho with kind of Aztec stuff knitted into it.
Aztec poncho. That is peak Bristol.
Yes.
Peak Bristol.
Well, there we go. Giles Peterson, Bristol, your new mayor. Don't scrap the position, just give it to Giles Peterson. And there'll be so many music festivals and so many didgeridoos being played on street corners.
But there's a music festival every week. That's one of his policies. There's 52 music festivals.
Yeah. Sorry, you're not having your bins collected anymore, but there's going to be an incredible world music symposium every single Friday and Saturday.
A load of flutes one week and then some sort of steel drum expo the week after. Incredible.
I think we've just gone through some kind of mad greatest hits this week. We just talked about Bristol and Marillion, and it's almost like we're just now circling back on ourselves in some strange way. We should, on that note, just, you know, fold this up and put it back where it came from.
Oh, and before I forget, my dad, who said I saw a modern version of what I thought to be a DS19 Citroen the other week, it was a C6. He's confirmed it.
Oh.
Lots of people have gone, surely it's a C6. It was.
Yeah.
I think he's quite fascinated.
I meant to say.
And,
good.
And two, there was our local village fete last week, and my brother did bring his stationary engines along that he'd restored. And I've been inundated.
People making smutty insinuations about your brother.
I have been inundated with comments from people saying, didn't see any attachments, didn't see any reciprocating sort of like whittled wooden fallacies. I didn't see a rolling pin covered in slick 50 pistoning. It's like so it's like, no, this one was for the kids, this village fake. But my brother, honestly, seeing the glee on my brother's face getting a Ruston Hornsby wartime era engine putting along on the ground, it was quite charming because he hasn't changed.
Did he get it running and then go, it'll do that all day?
Oh yeah, completely. That's it. It was
excellent.
It was hopping.
You can't not,
it was
surely.
Hopping across the floor, a bit like a kid that needs a piss and it's clamping, clamping themselves. Going, I'm not going, but I do need to go. I'm not going though. I'm doing that little sort of like elfy skippy hop. That's what it was doing. And he was just he had his hands in his pockets and he just looked at me and he went, "That's mint. Look at it. It's running perfectly. It's just really low idle.
It's nice to just find."
And he brought along, get this, he brought along a gallon of paraffin because he says, yeah, you start it on the petrol and I reckon within a minute I can switch it over to paraffin. And he did it and then just stood back, hands in pockets with a rag in his back pocket and just went, there you go. Look at that. It was just... And I'm just there
just
going...
The sense of being pleased with yourself at something like that must be immense.
That's what it is. And I think it is that simple pleasure that I see he gets from it. But what was lovely is those engines came from my neighbour who's been quite unwell recently, and he's had those engines for about 50-odd years.
Oh,
and he brought them there to show him. He said this is the first time they've run since the 70s. One of them hasn't
run.
And my brother got them both going. And then they started to talk about the fact that they're painted in the correct grey because they're both World War era production models, so they didn't have any maroon paint. Wow. And at that point, I might have slunk off for a coffee before they started getting their whittled rolling pins out.
Why is this ivory? Yes, I know it's not particularly good anymore, but look at the detail work on the bell. It's just exquisite.
This came from a tribe in Papua New Guinea. And
of course, they didn't have a steam engine or anything like that. They just used to use a sort of mechanism with a waterfall and a rudimentary water wheel using big leaves.
Don't you just
to power
is it? Me? I absolutely love the word rudimentary or rudimental.
Rudimentary.
Yeah, love it.
Rudimentary. Rudimentary.
Yeah, better than Will I Am.
Another one for the list.
Yeah. That's.
All right, well, before we go, I've got three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Late Plate Show, in which he looks at cars registered right towards the end of the model's production run. Most recent video, it's a V-Reg Rover 600. Lovely. If you don't like that, you will like The Late Break Show, which has got lots of videos about lots of cars, including, we think, one of the little review of the VW
Multivan. T7 Multivan.
Will be up by now, T7 Multivan.
Oh,
And loads of other good stuff. Audi Quattro Barn Find is a recent highlight, I think, isn't
it? Why isn't there everything you say always sounds like a John Peel session? When I say it, it doesn't.
I don't know. I think I'm slowly merging into my own impression of John Peel. It might be because I'm a bit claggy again.
Low
register.
The third thing I can say is Will.i.am's already started his project where he takes an immaculate Mitsuoka Vute and turns it into a Micra. Incredible idea. Well done, Will.
So ironic. Right, the second thing I've got to tell you is that we have merch. So if you want some Smith & Sniff T-shirts, mugs, stickers, we're going to get some new stickers, I think, aren't we? We're coming up with some new designs. But in the meantime, if you'd like an Otsot T-shirt or a Spolt mug or something like that, go to thelatebreakshow.com and look under the shop, where you'll also find Late Break merch as well. And the third thing I've got to tell you is Paul McCartney's real first name is James.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I only found that out the other day, and I thought, does everyone know that? It's just me, or does no one know that because it's never mentioned because his name's Paul?
I didn't know that.
Well, there we go. That's how he was christened anyway.
Okay.
I probably should have done some checking up on that, but I believe that to be the case. Write in if it's not on that or anything else that piques your interest in this podcast. It's hello@smithandsniff.com. hello@smithandsniff.com. Smith & Sniff all in words. No ampersands.
No, it's a shame. They don't allow them.
We don't allow them, so we don't use them. Yeah, love an ampersand.
Yeah, I do. Thanks for listening,
though,
everybody.
It's been quite low energy, hasn't it?
It's a low energy exit. unlike God
you
in 60
flew
seconds.
In on the red eye on Bryanair, yeah. And I went out boozing last night. And as a consequence, this has been a low energy production of Smith & Sniff. But thank you ever so much for listening.
Low pressure term.
Maybe a bit more low pressure. Yes, this is very. It's mainly for the economy and the talk, not for the performance. Next week, a bit more pep in our step, perhaps. But until then, goodbye.
Goodbye from me as well. I'm Johnny Smith.
You're a bit more up-tempo than...
I'm Johnny Smith. Listen. I'm Johnny Smith.
1 week, I'm just going to get someone else to do it, like a woman or something, and see if anyone notices.
Well, that's a great idea. Should we get our wives to just say...
get my daughter to do it.
Yeah, we should do. Should we get our kids to say, I'm Richard Porter?
Yes.
What about Fish from...
And
I'm Fish from Marillion.
Oh, man, that would be amazing. Can you imagine? Just completely blindside people. Just go, I'm Richard Porter, I'm Johnny Smith, and I'm Fish from Marillion. But then he's not in the episode.
And he's not mentioned at all.
No. I'm going to stop recording.
Do you actually know any other Marillion songs?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.